You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 33 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 21st. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your hosts for a weekly conversation about all things technology, but especially those that might be of some aid to your ministry. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm very good. We are rounding out our summer. We had a fun day in Minneapolis yesterday with our boys and managed to hit the Mall of America and make it to the Apple Store. So I've got some of that Apple envy going on this morning.
But is that the closest Apple Store to you? A couple hours away?
Yeah, I think it is.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, but we checked out all the gadgets. We found out that the iPhone does not work in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. So can't get that kind of coverage here. So
the 3G portion or at all.
AT&T portion.
Are you kidding me?
No, it doesn't happen in Sleepy Eye.
So
we played with it, but that was as far as that thought went. So.
We should put a call into Apple and say, hey, what's up with Sleepy Eye?
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Can't imagine them ignoring us here.
Oh, man. Well, no wonder there's not an Apple store closer. They can't sell you half their stuff.
What's the point?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, it's cool to play with, right?
It was very neat.
My
Pretty
son
impressive.
Just got his iPhone a couple weeks ago, and he's nonstop. He has not made it through a day without totally draining his battery, so you know he's a heavy user at this point. So he does not have 3G at our house, but he does at school. He goes to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, so he's in all his glory when he's on campus. So he's having a great time. He said it only crashed on him 3 times yesterday.
Oh,
so I think lots
that's
of little
encouraging.
Lots of little wrinkles they're still trying to work out over at Apple.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
Anyway, I want to talk a little bit and share with you and share with our listeners some of my experiences over the last week when I was visiting Dallas, Texas, close to your old stomping ground, Sally. Echo Church Media Conference. I did a bunch of blogging while I was there. I was there Wednesday through Saturday. And just some good stuff. I think just some general reflections about the conference itself as I think about, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. I had not been to a church media conference before. Since I'm not an artist, and most of the people that were there were artists. Not only were they artists, they were geeky artists. So it's a real unique combination of folks there. Just about 500 people showed up, and it was at Watermark Community Church, a large mega church in Dallas, beautiful facilities, great conference setting. But one of the things that opened my eyes was the sheer amount of Christian software. Now, you and I talk about lots of software on the show, but it's typically commercial or open source type products and usually not by Christians who are putting this together for ministry purposes. We're kind of saying, hey, you can use this commercial software, this open source software for ministry purposes. But a lot of the things that I saw there, a lot of the vendors, a lot of the conversations that I had were around software or websites that were specifically developed by Christians for Christians and for ministry purposes. So, you know, you often think of, you know, Christians that are developing software, it's kind of secondhand, you know, because we're not that big a segment, I guess, in the technology space. So, you know, I think a lot of the Christian stuff over the years that we've developed has not been, you know, enterprise level or, you know, top notch, but that's really changing. And that's one thing that I noticed right off the bat is just some good quality stuff there.
Very exciting for our Wells Tech listeners to be able to tap into your experiences there. So I'm sure we'll be sharing information over the next several weeks.
Oh, I've got a whole bag full of stuff that we can sprinkle through the next few episodes. So lots
Excellent.
Of good information there. Another thing that I noticed as I sat through some of the keynotes and as I talked to some of the people there was the utter importance of art. All kinds of art, whether it be musical or artistic, audio, video, whatever it is, and artists to the church. And that's something I think most Lutherans would agree with. Luther was certainly on board with that, too, that the arts add so much to the worship experience. We see it in our architecture, you know, in our churches. We see it in the stained glass. We see it in imagery. We see it in song and in music. There, and that's kind of what this conference was all about, bringing those people together and thinking about and brainstorming ways that that those people, those very gifted people, can apply their gifts to the work of the church. So very cool stuff.
Sounds like a great follow-up to the worship conference, Martin, because I know my husband came away from our Wells Worship Conference, you know, fired up about artistic elements in worship as well.
Mm-hmm. So oh, absolutely.
Good coupling there.
Oh, yeah. And then finally, a lot of the things that were at the conference, that I learned at the conference or were made aware of at the conference, were helpful in maybe me addressing some of the questions. One of the top questions that I get from a lot of our pastors and worship leaders and musicians within the church is, how do we begin to incorporate media into our services? This is just a guess, and it's not even scientific. It's very anecdotal. But I would say maybe 1 or 2% of all of our churches at this point incorporate some kind of digital media within the service itself. So they're either using a PowerPoint or some kind of display, you know, within the environment of the worship service. And I think we've got some real barriers within some of our churches to allowing that to happen. The biggest barrier in my mind is architecture. Our churches aren't set up very well for producing or showing any kind of digital media. So the lighting's not good. We don't have great places to put the screen if you want to use a screen. No nice places to put projectors, and so the architecture is working against us. Now that's no knock against the beautiful architecture in some of our churches, because that adds artistic beauty to the service as well. But it doesn't lend itself very well to incorporating media. You know, as I remember your church, Sally, and Sleepy Eye, yours probably falls in that category too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We've got, I think it was built in 1905 or something along those lines, and a very traditional architecture, and probably no good place really for a screen or anything like that, at mm-hmm. least on a permanent basis.
Right. Yeah, you can jimmy stuff in there, but it looks that way too, and
right.
That's really not what you want. So, yeah, so a lot of challenges there, but there are some ways around that, and I think we can share those over the coming weeks too, and I'm looking forward to doing that. So a couple things that I wanted to share about some of the tools that I saw that I was made aware of over my 3 days there. First one is a tool called Sermon Player. It's at sermonplayer.com. And essentially this is, and I wrote a blog post, but by the way, most of the things that I'm going to talk about today, I blogged about while I was there. So if you go to wells.net/imprint/technology, you'll be able to see all the blogs that I posted while I was there. There's probably 6 or 7 of them there. And some of the things here I go into a little bit more detail than I can on the show. Sermonplayer.com is essentially a way for you to publish your sermons online, not in written form, but in audio or video form. So if you do any audio taping or videotaping of your sermons or of your pastor's sermons during the worship service, this is an easy way to distribute those. It both goes on sermon.net, but also you can embed a little player right on your website, so it's nicely integrated with what you're already doing. It has an organizational, kind of tabbed interface so that you can line them up. You can add the scripture reference, a description, who preached the sermon, the date, all that good stuff. It's all cataloged for you. And the best part about it is those audio and video files don't live on your particular website. They live on the sermonplayer.com website, so that you're not consuming bandwidth or sucking up disk space, but you have this little window so it looks nicely integrated with what you're doing. Now, the audio version is free, and it's unlimited. There's unlimited space, so you can upload as many as you want, so there's no concerns there. If you want to go video, there's a paid-for version, and it's based on congregation size, average Sunday morning attendance. So if you have anything below 250 in average attendance on a Sunday morning, which is a lot of our Wells churches, is $25 a month. And then it goes up from there. But you can get all that stuff on your on the website. With another thing on this embeddable player is that not only can you cut and paste the code into your website, very easy to do, certainly with the Final Web stuff that we promote or we host, it's real easy to do. But you can also embed it in all kinds of social networking sites like Facebook or MySpace. You can put it in a WordPress blog if you're using blogging software. So all kinds of ways to insert this pretty great tool, and especially for the price, into your websites.
Sounds like a YouTube for churches, kind of.
Yeah, except you don't have all the other stuff
exactly
alongside, so it's kind of your own little YouTube, and you don't have to put just sermons in there. You can put any Bible classes that you record, or just little snippets. One thing they recommend, and they have a little player or recorder right on their site, so you can hit record, and you can just record, let's say, a daily word of the day or reference of the day or a little devotion, those kinds of things, all for free, and that just goes up there. You just send your members to it or your site visitors, and there it is. So,
is there RSS capability as
well?
I believe so. Cool.
So you've got a lot of options at your disposal, and you can there's a podcast. So there is, yeah, there's absolutely RSS as I think about it. So there's a podcast feed that you can get off of it, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. So
awesome.
Very Web 2.0-ish, and it's you know, certainly worth checking out. You know, it really alleviates some issues that if you've got a lot of, you know, bigger audio or video files, getting them off your site and onto somebody else's. Second thing that I uncovered there, which really fills a nice gap that I've really struggled with, and I know a lot of our congregations have struggled with, and that's church copyright for broadcasting. Now, a lot of our churches do broadcast or podcast the sermons, and so there's obviously no copyright issues there. So you're not sending over any copyrighted material, so you don't have to worry about that. But a lot of our churches want to broadcast or make available via the internet their entire service, which definitely does include copyrighted material. So even if you're just using Christian worship, there is copyrighted, those hymns are copyrighted, or many of them are, and they're not all in the public domain. And we've talked about copyright before. Harvey Dunn was on the show, one of our early episodes, right?
Mm-hmm. So, that's right.
Talking about copyright and just, you know, really muddy waters, and it's tough to wade through. But this Church Copyright Administration is what the site's called, churchca.com, is basically a service that will allow you to broadcast copyrighted music. And they license all the songs to you. It's kind of like onelicense.net for web broadcast. A lot of our congregations are familiar with onelicense.net. So they cover ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, those licensing organizations, and essentially allow you for a fee, obviously, to broadcast that music along with your service, either audio or video, doesn't make any difference. I believe the cost is like $925 a year. So it's not cheap, but if that's something you're interested in doing, that is a good blanket coverage. And they've got all kinds of other resources, so even if you don't buy their service, they have a good FAQ. They have excellent other resources on the site that'll kind of help you wade through that broadcasting copyrighted music question. So churchca.com. And then the last one that I wanted to mention, at least on this show, is phonevite.com. That's P-H-O-N-E-V-I-T-E. And we've talked a little bit about some of these kinds of tools before, and I know that I've had some listeners recommend some other services to me, but this one really kind of grabbed me. Basically, it's a service that allows you to create one message and have it automatically call all the people on a particular list. So it's kind of like, you know, telemarketing gets such, you know, is kind of the bad, you know, a bad analogy. But basically, it's a recorded call that goes to predetermined phone numbers. I was thinking about different usage for this. One would be school cancellations. We here in the Midwest have school cancellations once in a while, yeah, at least once or twice a winter when it's snowing. And what do you typically have to call to make notification happen across the school system is maybe a calling tree or a phone tree. This really replaces that. There's other applications for it, too. You could have reminders that go out to all your members, or let's say a reminder about a voters meeting. For some reason, if church is canceled or church service time changes, breaking news or an invitation, maybe perhaps a good use of this would be a subscription kind of a service where you say, you know, do you want to receive these kinds of messages? Let's say it's a daily devotion or a weekly devotion that's that calls somebody's cell phone. Word of the day or word of the week. Great service. You can get a free version for 25 phone numbers. You can call 25 phone numbers for free. If you go above that, then it's 5 cents per successful call up to 2,000. There's a couple neat features here. There's an RSVP feature, so you can call with a question and people can respond by touching I think their touch tone, 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for not sure. They can also reply with their own message, so they can hit a button and send a voicemail back that you retrieve. And now one other feature is you can send that voicemail as an attachment to an email address, so not only can you call them, so if they don't pick up or it goes into voicemail, it'll actually email them a, I believe it's an MP3 file that they can play, you know, on their computer. So lots of different ways to get a hold of them. So it's got some uses. I think there's some appeal for churches and especially for schools.
I could definitely see us making use of that here at St. John's. Communication is just huge. Mm-hmm. And just in time communication, timing it so that it's pertinent, it gets to them at the moment that they need that reminder or whatever, is going to really increase maybe your attendance at meetings or, you know, attention to a particular topic that you want to communicate. So mm-hmm. I could see that having some real value in a congregation.
Right. No, absolutely. So those are, you know, my initial thoughts from the Echo Conference. Great experience overall, and I think there's some things that on down the line I'll be able to share with our listeners as well.
Very good. You also had a chance to talk to some people there.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to be playing some of those interviews. In fact, we'll play one of them today. I had a chance to sit down with Matt Frazier of the Pursuant Company, and they have a product called Unifier, which was just launched at the Echo Conference. Unifier with a Y, that's unifyer.com. And Matt can explain it in the interview better than I can, you know, prefacing the interview, but essentially it is he calls it a Web 3.0 app. And he explains why he does that, you know, within the interview. But essentially, it makes use of some very current technology called Adobe Flex that allows for online collaboration and community building among congregation members. So it's a social network, yes, but it's a lot more than that. I think it allows for groups to gather around different purposes, kind of even in an ad hoc fashion. So if you've got a group that's meeting, you know, moms, we have a group at Peace called Moms at the Cross. So they could create a group that they could rally around. Your youth group is a great example for people who could use this tool. It kind of works like a congregational intranet, is the sense that I got of it, where people can come together. You can add friends. You can have blogs. You can, you know, share information. You can, you know, see who's doing what. Lots of cool tools that are available, and the interface is absolutely beautiful. If you go to the site, just click on the church demo, and you kind of see how things just really look nice. I think it would be a great impression for people inside the church. It's all internal, so people need usernames and passwords. So let's listen to the interview by Matt Frazier, and then once we're done, Sally and I'll talk a little bit about it. I'm here at the Echo Church Media Conference in Dallas, Texas, and good enough to join me this morning is Matt Frazier, CEO of Pursuant, and the company that produces a brand new web application called Unifier. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
First of all, I wanted to ask you a little bit about a statement you made last night. I attended the demo,
That you provided for all the conference participants last night on the Unifier product. And one of the statements that you made that is of particular interest maybe to Lutherans is that the internet may have more impact than the printing press. And obviously that's a big statement, and I think I kind of agree with it, but I wanted to ask you about that, especially from a Lutheran perspective, where the Reformation, you know, would not have happened without the advent of the printing press and Martin Luther's use of it. Why do you think the internet is such an invention that might change the way ministry happens and how communication happens?
Well, you think about the history of the church itself, and I think that when you look back at this narrative gospel that was shared for so long, mm-hmm. prior to the everyman having the scriptures, and you think about the Reformation, you think about this, you know, what Martin Luther did was very significant, but along what came along is there were many people at that time, as you probably well know, who had some similar concerns about what the church was doing. And, you know, there's a, you know, God brought alongside of Martin Luther this technology in the printing press that enabled not just the Reformation, and certainly what the result of that was this rise in every man understanding the scriptures. And so what I see the transition being, and I think for the church, which is so significant, is this is really the first time that all nations really can hear the gospel. And we think about Matthew 25:14, we think that being actually realized, and this is really the first time that that could actually happen. Now, some would say, well, if we really look at internet usage or internet availability across the world, it's certainly growing, but there are places that don't have it. But there are stories that I've heard many people share. Rick Warren shared that there was a man who walked 3 miles to download his sermon. He lived in an area that didn't have electricity or running water. And on his way back, he recorded it, and, you know, he downloaded it, and then he re-preached it, which is just fantastic to see how the internet is reaching even into very remote areas. But I think the biggest impact of the internet for the advancement of the gospel, in my opinion, is we're going to see there's something, in at least in our culture, in this internet culture, where we're lifting up the value of immediacy, that we really are seeing, which in some cases is unfortunate, but the expectations of people is we'd have it now. And the internet is enabling people in real time to collaborate. And that collaboration is, I think, when God's work and God's heart and God's people are put together, regardless of proximity, if we can unite them, there's some synergies of effort that are tremendous. And I mentioned last night, one of the things that I just hope happens from the internet, not really from Unifier. Unifier, I think, has a place as a platform for a global solution. But I'm just really, I'm really concerned about the issues that happen in countries where there are so many different organizations that go in, mission trips and all sorts of things about people being very intentional about serving people in many cases in dangerous places. But there are so many people, if you've ever been in those countries, there are so many different organizations that are there. Why don't we just use simple technology to coordinate our efforts as the church? Let's put aside theology for a second and say, are we here to serve those who are diseased and dying? Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited about what, you know, what we would call on this side of the pond, the mashup of data and technology. So I'm really excited about how I believe God will use it. But you will hear this, and this is the kind of last thing I'll say on this topic. You'll hear this a lot, that the redemption of the internet, and that there is God redeemed this thing for His glory. And I believe that that is our calling. And I think there are many people that are engaged in technology that kind of taking back, in a way, the internet for good. And I haven't seen a whole lot of, I see a lot of people with that heart, but not a lot of people with that wherewithal. And I'm excited about this conference and people like yourself who are saying, how do we go about leveraging this for the kingdom?
Great. When you said that last night, one thing that immediately came to mind, and you just said it again, is that I think the church is at a point where they're over the fact that this is cool, this is technology, we got to get on board because this is where the world is, to how do we share Jesus through it? You know, what are the many ways that we can, you know, take this and use it and kind of be the best that we can be through technology?
Yeah, I think there's a common thought that we need more technology, and I think that's driven by technology companies. Honestly, right. You know, I often think about the Gillette razor blades. Right, they started with two blades, and then they had three, and four, and five, and now they buzz, and they have a motor, and they have all this. You know, how many blades can we eventually have? Because there's a point in which you got to stop, because there are so many blades, it's larger than your face,
right.
And so that's just a result, and I think a metaphor for more technology. And I think there's a point in which you kind of overcome the impressive nature of, wow, I can bulk Twitter, or I can bulk text message, or I can, you know, you get over that kind of wow factor. And, you know, what I'm really engaged in asking is, let's not let the tools drive us. Let's let our heart, mission, or calling drive us, and let's make technology do what we want it to do. Meaning, let's make technology solve our problems. Let's understand how people are using it. Let's understand how it is helping in other areas. But one thing that is just a fact is that generally this kind of nonprofit group, the church, is really, in many cases, 15 years behind.
Right.
And in a way, there's an advantage there. Certainly, I don't think anyone expects the church to be cutting edge. However, the what I think is exciting is that we can look at the mistakes that others are making. They're kind of paying some dumb taxes for us,
mm-hmm.
and let's learn from that. But it's like any artist. The artist doesn't say, well, I happen to have this chisel, therefore I'm going to use it. It's more of there's a deep understanding of what needs to be expressed, and then the tools will be found to express that. And that's really how I want to encourage people to look at technology. And too often, technologists, we outsource our solutions to technologists. And I'm not trying to, you know, bag on technologists, but even technology people can be encouraged and led to dream first,
right.
Rather than go, hey, well, look at these tools we've got. And so often people are getting pushed into kind of software boxes. And honestly, I hate to say this, but it's driven by money.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's got to make a living, but I think we can merge both, which is asking the right questions first and then making technology do it.
Right. So let's talk about Unifier.
Okay.
What is Unifier, maybe, for our audience? You know, probably has never heard of it. It's a brand new product, I understand. So, you know, in a nutshell, kind of how would you describe it for somebody who's, you know, maybe looking at it for the first time?
Sure. Unifier is a communication platform, that first and foremost, and it is a web-based application. And you'll see a lot of this, if you're interested and involved in technology, you'll see there's a lot of these enterprise level applications that are being delivered through the browser window. And Google applications is probably the best example of this. Gmail, Docs and Spreadsheets and other are delivering some really robust applications through the browser window. This is a big development because it used to be, there's kind of three phases in computing so far. The first, that mainframe era, then a PC era, which, you know all the flavors of shrink wrap software, how we have to do versioning, and, you know, it's a waiting period, right? Even with operating systems now.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that development in the PC era, you had to develop for Mac and, you know, for Windows and for Linux, and now we've removed that variable, and it's really big to understand what I call kind of this micro application development. It is the most exciting development because it's a different way of computing. And the old Sun Microsystems thought back in the day, which was the network as the computer, is true now. And I think we're going to see a lot with grid computing. We're going to see a lot with utilizing shared resources. We see that now in solving problems. But the old dumb terminal, I think, is coming back. And that's kind of it's kind of ironic. But what's exciting about it is it means that these applications that we're developing solve very specific needs. So the cost to develop them is much lower. Therefore, the church could be a group in which could get cutting-edge development. And that's what we've done. We said, let's take an application model that's what we call agile, and it is rapid application development, meaning we have deliverable software that can be used every 3 weeks. It's done in an agile development process. And what I like to kind of test is, would my mother-in-law be able to use it?
Right.
And, you know, 37 Signals is probably the first one to come up with that concept to say, hey, let's keep this simple because otherwise it's not going to be able to be used. That's the neat thing about web applications is you don't have to save the world with your app. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to do everything. However, there's some core things that Unifier does that is fundamental within the church. And if you are a Web 2.0 person, and if you are someone who has read like the book The Long Tail by Chris Anderson, you'll realize that the broadcast model, which is really crumbling around us in other industries like music and media, is that when there's an increase in choices, people tend to choose those. Mm-hmm. So the big hits get less and less, and there are so many more options, but we continue to consume those options at the tune of 98%. But what's exciting about the internet and this concept of decentralization is we can empower ministry leaders now to go and communicate directly with those who are volunteers. And so a big thing, I've been in kind of association management and leadership and fundraising for a long time, as well as technology. And one of the biggest questions that I've run into is, how do we motivate volunteers? How do we engage volunteers? How do we connect people to the church? How do we reduce the amount of pain that comes from administration of our work? And at every single church, there's a bottleneck. It's the bulletin. It is the it's the pulpit. And not because it's a bad thing, but because there's a limited amount of time. There's only so much space in the bulletin. There's only so much time from the pulpit. But there's so many wonderful things that are happening within the church that ought to be lifted up. And so the organic nature of ministry and also the nature of ministry. And I mentioned last night, and I think it's worth mentioning now, is that there's a woman who's the wife of one of our developers who's dealing with chronic pain. And she's had her spine fused many times. My mother's actually gone through the same thing. And it lives with such a deep amount of pain. And she said, does this mean with this application, I could start a little ministry and share the scripture that has really spoken to me? And, you know, in our denomination, if you were going to start a ministry, you have to go through like this process, and you have to be approved, and then you have to get a logo made, and you know there may only be 5 people, but those people aren't going around wearing a sign that says I'm dealing with chronic pain. And so to be able to have a community, to be able to communicate with folks and lift up things that people have really a heart for or is literally the focus of their life, and connecting them with like-minded people, not only for just to be ministered to, but also to do the work of Christ in the world, I think is significant. And so we've built Unifier to do just that. First and foremost, to decentralize the communication so it doesn't have to go through the pastor. We've done that in a really unique interface that's kind of drag and drop, very, very simple. But then we've tied in online community to that. But we are not an online community tool in the sense of Facebook or MySpace. Although we mirror those tools, those tools on their own do not survive in a church website because people don't use them. Mm-hmm. It needs to be driven by communication. And I think that every pastor I share this with, Unifier, is so relieved because they go, does this mean that people can connect with the lay leaders of these ministries and connect with each other and without me being in the way? And that will free me up. Yes, is the answer. So that's the extended dance version of Unifier, I suppose.
Okay.
The way I looked at it and the way you did the demo last night is it allows multi-directional communication, top down, bottom up, sideways, you know, diagonal, whatever. However a congregation or a community wants to communicate, this allows it to do. You can communicate directly with friends. You know, it sounds like it's a framework that allows for the best kind of communication possible, driven by those people who really have a desire to do it.
Right. And one of the things that, you know, I almost encourage you to, before you look at a demo of Unifier, think about where the pain is in your organization. Think about where the bottlenecks are, and imagine, kind of wish what would it look like if we had what we wanted? And that's what we've done. And I think, you know, we're not there yet because every 3 weeks we've got new features that are coming. But as it currently exists with the platform, it really, truly is a platform that could be used for any organization that has that's group based. And the local church is where my heart is. And I feel like you're absolutely right. The whole idea of collaboration, it leads to good things when people's minds and hearts are fixed on the right things.
Cool. So give us the nuts and bolts, the blocking and tackling of how to get involved with this. The website is Unifyer, UNIFY.
It's not spelled right. If you're a Spelling Bee champion, you will go to the wrong site with Unifyer. We're trying to be clever like everyone else, but also in the trademarking and all that. We wanted to keep the term unify in the word, and so unify, E-R, so UNIFYER.com. We have several different spellings in there, but just in and of its name, Unifyer, the way in which you can find out more about it is to go to the website and watch the church demo. That's what I'd recommend. One of the things we've also done with the application I think is helpful to know when it comes to adopting it is we have we've changed the kind of the model for pricing. We believe that you shouldn't pay for the application unless you use it, and that's very different than a lot of other companies. They're saying, well, it's this setup fee, and it's this monthly, and it's this bandwidth, and it's this storage.
Right.
Well, Chris Anderson, who wrote the book The Long Tail, is coming out with a new book about free, that the basically the commodity of storage and bandwidth and all that. Now, it's not free right now, but we anticipate it going down. And so what we decided to do is we decided to say we're going to fix a rate per user per month, and we're not going to we believe that it's going to be something that you would adopt and would utilize within the church. But we also provide, in a way, no risk to get involved because a lot of people are concerned about signing contracts and being obligated to a certain amount, and then they go, well, what if this doesn't work at my church, or what if people don't use it?
Right.
And I think that keeps people from engaging with software. So we decided to say, we're going to remove that risk. If you contact us and mention the Echo in this conference, we will extend a free trial to you, which is helpful, I think, for folks to get started and understand it. But the best way to do it is go check out the demo, see how that works. I'd grab the folks that are concerned with communications, with technology, and have those kind of questions. And then it really needs an internal champion, I'll be honest with you. Someone has to get it, because even at my church, I shared it with several people. I think, oh, that's nice. That's good for you. Attaboy. And then the senior pastor came over, and I showed him a demo in my office, and he's a triathlete, and he went out to the lake and did his 40-mile ride, and he came back. He wrote me the longest email, and he doesn't have a lot of time, and he just said, boy, the implications of this for us are tremendous. And he actually does an interview on unifyer.com. I encourage you to take a look. His name's Jeff Warren. And that's what it requires, is someone that understands that this is a paradigm shift for us. We actually can eliminate paper. We can eliminate mass emails. We can eliminate a lot of the things that we're sending out and printing. But it doesn't work if it's redundant. It has to be a replacement. But I think a lot of people, especially within the office that are doing administrative work,
right,
this is a big, big way to lighten their load.
So I realize this is just really launched, so it's kind of a 1.0, you know, release, but I have to ask, you know, what's next? What do you see out there in the next 6, 12, 18 months for Unifyer?
Sure. Well, one of the things to keep in mind, we've been around for 7 years, and we are funded, so that provides us a little different than kind of the bootstrap organization. I did the bootstrapping for 6 years. But what's really exciting is we got Texas A&M University to be the first group. And this is just to see how God works. It's just so exciting. I put together a PowerPoint slide, and this kind of vision of this application came together. I still have that slide. And I took it to Texas A&M, the Association of Former Students there. We had them as a client, and I shared it around. And amazingly, this PowerPoint slide resonated with people. They're like, this is exactly what we need. And so we work with a lot of colleges and universities. Well, there's probably some Aggies actually that are listening to this, but we launch here in a couple weeks with them, and it's been a long time coming. But what I'm really excited about is this application, unlike shrink-wrapped PC-era software, every 3.5 weeks new features come about. So, for example, the things that are on our feature list, integrated calendaring, which is really big. Every single post could be attached to a calendar item, and then you can see a global calendar. So imagine being a pastor and being able to one click go, I'm going to drag this slider and I'm going to see everything or just one thing. I can query an entire calendar. And this means if I've got my small group buddies getting together, you're going to be able to see that on the calendar, which is pretty exciting. The second is integrating with external web media. So Flickr, PhotoBucket, being able to bring in your other profiles and other data, RSSing in. So if you're blogging elsewhere, you can RSS right in. You don't have to use a different, you don't have to come in and use the tools. They'll automatically post internally. I'm going to get into a number of technical things on you. Deep linking, which enables anyone to share anything anywhere. Indexing, which some churches don't want. Others do, which would provide external people kind of on the Google searches to be able to crawl the Flex application.
Is there search in the tool right now, internal search?
Yeah, there's internal search in each of the categories. Okay. But, you know, some people like the idea that this is contained and none of it is externally, so that literally we've got a private community. Mm-hmm. I like that, too, for certain applications, but other people really like the idea of saying, hey, we want to draw people in. Real-time video capture through the browser window. So if you're a Facebook user, capturing video without having to have video software is a big application. Instant messaging. And then my big one, now everyone debates about features, but one I'm really excited about from a global perspective is there's a technology in Flex called Ribbit that's already complete, that's an add-on, which enables IP telephony. So you're able to have essentially a Skype client within your application. Mm-hmm. But here's the neat thing. As these things get rolled out and as these new features come up every 3.5 weeks, there's no additional cost. It's not like, well, we've upgraded, you need to buy the upgrade. No, it changes and it grows, mm-hmm. and it continues to become a better platform. And that's, to me, what's most exciting.
Hey, you mentioned IP telephony. Is there... You know, so the ability to talk to somebody online. So is there presence, you know, availability then, so you know when somebody else is online then?
Well, yeah, and that's pretty, you know, because of the way data services works with Flex, it's really exciting. You think about how Ajax works, so you don't have to refresh the page. Flex is really an exciting platform to develop on because real-time data services is literally, yeah, we're engaging just like an instant messenger client. Ribbit enables the same things as Skype does, and I believe you can call home phones with that. I mean, so being able to see when people are online, currently have that, and, you know, the real-time data services and interacting with people, what that leads to, and we haven't even really talked about these type of things, but there can be and could be collaborative spaces that literally, you know, we could move things around in the same space. We could whiteboard together across the world, literally, if we wanted to. And not that that's the solution, but that's pretty exciting when it comes to the old refresh your page internet. Right. We're now into, you know, real-time collaboration. So that's why I think Flex is a great development platform.
Matt, thanks so much for your time. Blessings on your work. You're passionate about it, and I think that shows in the product, too. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
So, Sally, what do you think?
Well, it sounds really impressive, Martin. I guess my question would be how you go about getting started. You know, I'm thinking about our congregation. Is there a particular group that maybe you'd start with to kind of spearhead the efforts in a congregation? Or
yeah, some groups I think are going to gravitate toward using it more than others. I think youth groups would be really, really hip with this. They would. I think they would get on board right away. But I think just for information sharing, one thing that I don't remember if you mentioned it in the interview or not, we talked about so many things, but notifications. So when something goes up, an email goes out. So even people in your church that don't, aren't used to going to a website, This acts as a notification tool. As long as they're in the system, they're going to get an email that says, hey, something new is posted. There's a new meeting, or there's a new pastor's update, something like that could easily go on here, and then people could just kind of stay in tune. And the whole point is to try and keep the congregation close, keep them communicating with one another. You mentioned earlier in the show that it's important to, kind of strengthen those communication lines, and this is just another way of doing it. And I think they've got the pricing model right, 40 cents per month per active user. So after 90 days, if somebody doesn't log in, they become inactive. So you're really not paying for people who aren't using the system. You're only paying for active users. So I think there's some appeal there, as far as the pricing model. So Unifier.com. I was really impressed. I sat through an online demo. I sat through an in-person demo by Matt, and I know they're real excited about it. And this is probably going to kind of usher in a whole new age of applications, I think. And this is really one of the first that I've seen that does it in, kind of what he calls a Web 3.0 kind of way.
It's exciting times that we live in, and it's just really thrilling for me to see these kind of tools unwrap for congregational usage. I think the world is catching on. I think Matt said in the interview, churches tend to lag behind. We're nonprofit. We don't invest a lot in technology or whatever. But having that vision to apply the tools that are available today for congregational usage can really just explode, our communications within our congregations.
Yep, absolutely. So our thanks again to Matt for taking the time. He is a busy man, and I know he had a lot of things going on at the conference, but he was able to carve out a half hour to talk with me about something that he's obviously very passionate about, and we certainly hope that it is successful and can be used. So if your congregation is looking for an internal communications tool that allows people to gather around affinities, what they're interested in, this might be something worth checking out. Our segment that comes up next, Sally, is our Picks of the Week. What have you had this week?
Well, I have a little gadget that I wanted to share with everyone. It's actually a website called online-stopwatch.com. And it's very simple. You can count up or count down to any time that you set on the stopwatch. So you can basically use it as a little timer, on-screen timer, if you're doing any kind of function that you'd like to set a time limit of, taking test in a classroom, maybe just trying to improve your personal productivity, saying, I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes on this task, and timing yourself and having an alarm go off so that you move on to the next task on your list. I think there's lots of little applications. It's not, a huge deal for you to add a timer to your life, but it is a very, very easy way to incorporate a little stopwatch kind of function into your various functions that you're doing throughout the day. It's at onlinestopwatch.com.
Cool. How are you using it?
Well, I think I'm going to make use of it in my computer lab. I only get 30 minutes with each class twice a week. So those 30 minutes are like precious to me. And one of the things that I have to accomplish is they have to do some keyboarding practice, which is very, very important for them to learn. And we want them to learn those skills at an elementary level now, because by the time they get to high school, they need to be good keyboarders already. And so I have to dedicate time to that, but I only want to dedicate 15 minutes of my 30 minutes with them. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start that timer when they walk in the room. And as soon as they've gotten their keyboard time in, then we get to move on to some more exciting things. And so that's my primary use coming up for the school year.
Cool. Cool. My pick is something that I was introduced to at the church media conference as well, and that's a website called youversion.com. That's youversion.com, and it's an online Bible. We've talked on the show before about BibleGateway.com, and I've been using that for a couple years now. Very useful tool, many different translations on it. YouVersion is kind of the Web 2.0 version of and the kind of the social networking version of BibleGateway.com. It has all the same versions. You can get NIV, King James, whatever it is that you're looking for, in a very cool-looking interface. But what they've added is the ability to annotate Bible passages. So you can use it as your own little study tool. So you're reading a passage. You can add your own notes. I would envision a pastor being able to use this to add his own notes or Bible study notes to a particular passage or series of passages. You can either make them public or private, so it could be an evangelism tool where you're talking about a particular passage and sharing our approach or our view or our translation of a particular passage. A lot of our pastors have wonderful exegetical skills that might be of great benefit to other people reading the site, especially non-Wells visitors. And there's all kinds of social tools around this as well. This is a very new site. It's in beta, by the way. So I noticed that there is some slowness on the site, now and again. But there's a bunch of tools that are going to be coming out, I think, as time goes on. There's a one-year reading plan, I think, that's available now. There's all kinds of little social, sharing things, so you can share Bible passages with people. What you can also do is you can add all kinds of media content. You can add links, images, video. You can embed videos, YouTube videos. People have done some very creative things. Another thing that they have is a journal. So if you do any journaling, you can read a particular Bible passage and write, and this is obviously private, write in your journal as you go along. So something that I wasn't aware of, again, something that I think a Christian company that's figured out how to do this in a very professional way, and lots of possibilities here. Did you ever heard of that, Sally, YouVersion.com?
No, I haven't, but I'm real intrigued by it. I could see it being a really neat Bible study tool for a small group Bible study. Mm-hmm. Even maybe you meet once a week, and then you take away passages that you're going to look at throughout the week and be able to interact and get other people's impressions or ideas about the passages you're studying.
Yep, you can add tags. You can just look at your contributions versus everybody else's. Again, as I mentioned, you think it can be private or they can be public. But it's really meant to study the Bible together, to share your thoughts with other people. So I think there's a great potential here for those kinds of things. And again, it's a kind of a cool-looking interface, too. You can create groups. Groups is one of those features that is not yet available. A contact list, so you can build a community around this, and you can invite friends and those kinds of things. So I think it's a site worth keeping an eye on. You may not want to jump in with both feet yet, but I think if you check back probably over a period of time, this is going to be something you might be interested in.
And I'm just thinking about one of those kind of webby terms of mashup, which is, yep, where you kind of combine different applications and come up with your own. And you mentioned embedding YouTube videos. I'm wondering if you could embed the sermon.net videos that you talked about earlier in this show.
Certainly a link. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
maybe even more. I'm not sure.
That would be a cool tie-in.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, awesome.
So you never know. There's lots of potential.
Yep. I like the way you think. All right, let's go on to our Wells.net feature of the week.
Well, I wanted to promote today the imprint blog, just give you a little jingle about that, and that's at wells.net/imprint, and it's our blog of Synod administrators. Martin, I remember you and I attending a conference together, a communication conference back in 2004, I believe.
Well, it was just a long started time ago. Here, yeah.
And one of the things that we heard about there was blogs and podcasting. Those were like brand new things, and we came back, really excited about the potential of having this conversation. Mm-hmm. Instead of communication just being one way, top down, the blogs just really busted open those doors and allowed for two-way conversations, basically.
Yep.
And we knew that we wanted to be part of the conversation as well. And so that's when Imprint Blog was born, early in 2005. And our Synod administrators have been blogging since then. And it's not just the administrators. I should give kudos to groups like our Committee on Relief. When Hurricane Katrina hit, we had blogs out there, you know, firsthand accounts from New Orleans and all the follow-up and everything that Wells did in that area after Katrina. And certainly we've had Synod Convention bloggers at two of our Synod Conventions now, where we had the, you know, actual delegates giving us their firsthand impressions from the Synod Convention floor. So Imprint has definitely played a part and given a voice to a group of people and also allowed for that two-way dialogue. Currently, you're going to find blog posts out there from many of our Synod administrators, just kind of what's coming across their desk, what their impressions are, what their thoughts are based on the season of the year, or, you know, different projects that they're involved in or whatever. So just really neat insight and ability to dialogue with the administrators who are carrying out the work of Wells at the administrative level. And I guess it's worth mentioning again that you have a few blog posts out there as of recently.
I wasn't going to mention it, you know.
Went away to this conference and got a little bit fired up about a few things. So there's maybe, six or seven blog posts just from the last week that were posted there by you. So if you want to get some more insight into the Echo Conference and the things that Martin saw and experienced there, you can certainly find that at Imprint as well.
Yep, great. Thanks, Sally. Anything we want to call attention to in the Wells world for our listeners?
Sure. I was out on the Wells calendar. That's at wells.net/jump/calendar. And just noticed a few things coming up in September and October. Our Church Librarians Organization is going to have a fall conference on September 13th at Star of Bethlehem in New Berlin, Wisconsin. And the seminary is hosting a Friends of the Seminary Day on October 4th at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. And also sprinkled throughout September are the schedule of the district pastors conferences going on in all of the 12 districts of Wells. So you can find all that information and more at wells.net/jump/calendar.
Thanks, Sally. And our last segment prior to sharing a little bit of music from Don Gallagher this week is our community feedback. Who is talking to us?
Well, we always enjoy hearing from our listeners, and today we're doing the East Coast thing. We heard from a pastor down in Florida. That's Pastor John Mosh. He's at Peace in Bradenton, Florida, and he was actually looking for...
That's actually West Coast Florida.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just wanted to be accurate because I'm sure that's a point of contention in Florida.
Okay, but Florida
Gulf
is
Coaster.
An East Coast state.
that I'll give you.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Anyway, Pastor Mosh was looking for the lectionary in a calendar format, something that he could import into Outlook or Google Calendars or whatever. And this is something that the worship area has posted in the past on the worship website. So we put a bug in Pastor Brian Gerlach's ear and asked him if they were going to be updating those resources for the 2008-2009 church year. And Pastor Gerlach said he certainly would look into that. He'd love to have those resources posted again. So we'll keep you up to date as well as Tech listeners as soon as we hear from Pastor Gerlach if those resources are posted for the coming church year.
Yep.
The other one that we heard from, another East Coast state at least, I'm not quite sure where in the state.
Now I got you nervous.
Yeah. We heard from Steve Brown. He's a layman at Messiah in South Windsor, Connecticut. And what was so exciting about Steve's email was the fact that he's been listening to our podcast and it kind of motivated him to start his own blog. So that is just really cool, learning more about the Web 2.0 tools and the power of blogging. He went out and started his own. The focus of Steve's blog is worship resources. He is their worship coordinator there at Messiah in South Windsor, and he's posted a blog, and he thought it might be useful to other Wells members throughout the Synod, just with lots of different worship ideas and resources. So we'll include a link to his blog in our show notes, and thanks, Steve, for sharing that.
And thanks to every one of our listeners. We appreciate you listening, and we would love to hear you on our show. So tell us what you'd like to hear, what you'd like us to talk about, your impressions, you know, the things that are working for you, how technology is playing a part in your particular ministry, whether it be personal ministry or congregational ministry. WellsTech.wells.net is the place to find all of the show notes and ways to connect with Sally or myself. Well, that would about do it, Sally. We are way over time this week. Maybe I can blame that on Matt Frazier. He was so windy. No, actually, it was us. We appreciate Matt and the things that he shared with us. But we are going to close the show, as we always do, with Wells' featured musician and the beautiful solo piano of Dawn Gelhar from her album Inspirations, and her song, Nearer, My God, to Thee. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.